I want to welcome you to the Engineer Your Success podcast. I'm your host, Dr. James Bryant. This podcast provides tools, tips, and techniques to help you achieve success in business and in life. It's my pleasure to guide you on your journey to designing and living a life where you are winning at work and at home.
As an engineering leader, you know firsthand that achieving work-life balance can be hard. Many business owners struggle with the balance between their personal lives and their work. This leads to stress and a feeling of regret. But that's not the case for the listeners of the Engineer Your Success podcast with Dr. James Bryant. This podcast provides tools, tips, and techniques to help you achieve success both in business and in life. Tune in. Let's engineer your success today.
I hope you are having a great week. I believe that you are going to get some inspiration for your ideas. We have a very special guest, Mr. Wayne Carroll. Wayne is the host of the Leveraging Inspiration podcast. Tell our audience a bit more about what you do and about yourself, Wayne.
Yeah. So I'm a patent attorney. I went to law school after I worked as an engineer. I have a degree in electronics engineering. After I worked as an engineer for a bit, I found out about this idea of patent attorney, and I loved it. I wanted to do it. I actually prepared for a few years while still working as an engineer and then went to law school, been working as an attorney since I got out. I started this firm in 2013. I'd done a few other things, mostly in patents. I decided to call it Inspired Idea Solutions. I send the message that for inventors, inspired ideas are both a blessing and a burden. Twice this week, I've had someone say, well, If I didn't try to make this work, I couldn't live with myself. This isn't an easy path, but I got to do it.
That's awesome because people have inspired ideas. They're people that are listening to this podcast. You absolutely may have an inspiring idea, but the question is, what are you going to do next? What are you going to do with that? That's where Wayne and your firm help clients walk through that process of taking that inspired ideal and protecting it, putting it in a position so that you can better monetize it?
Yeah. There's a few things. Inventors want to be able to make money because it does cost quite a bit to bring a product to market. Mm-hmm. If it's a new product, there's a lot to do to successfully bring it to market, even if you're just licensing it to somebody else and they're going to manufacture it. There's still a lot to do. And that costs money. Good people with money do good things. It's not like going after money is a bad thing. Because if you're a good person, you're going to do good things with that money. Mm-hmm. They want other people to have the solution. They want other people to stop suffering or turning the crank and hurting their arm or whatever it is. They want it out there. But at the beginning, those are two opposed things. If they go out and start telling everybody about it and selling it, it actually makes it a lot harder for them to monetize it in the long run. Okay. And to make money. There are some inventions where if you strategically do it, that might be the way to go. Mm-hmm. I heard a story that's the ballpoint pen. The guy who invented it decided not to go through the patent process, but just sell a ton to lawyers and people that write a lot and charge a lot. Once other people came in the market, he was like, I'm happy. I got a bunch of money off this because they were, before the ballpoint pen, they were dipping ink and it's messy. That was just like blowing people's minds that I can just keep writing and not have all this mess.
I never thought about that from the standpoint of how innovative that solution was and the problem that it solved. We think it's pretty simple for a ballpoint pen and that whole mechanism of writing, but I guess when it was created, it was a really novel idea.
So my understanding is he decided not to go through the patent process, not to try to create an empire, but just to get some money out. I don't know how much he made being the first to market. Having this for people who write all the time, they might have paid a couple hundred bucks for it. A ballpoint pen was an example of someone who chose not to file patent, and that was just their business decision. And there's nothing wrong with that.
I think one of the things that you said is that people have inspired ideals and they want to help people. It creates this tension between helping people, being able to provide the product that you may have for a low cost or for free, getting the information out there, and then setting yourself up for long-term success so that you can monetize that product so you can continue to help people. One of the questions I have for you is, what was the inspiration to start your firm, Inspired Ideal Solutions? Because was it that you saw someone that had an ideal that was taken advantage of? Did you see people struggling? What was the motivation behind that?
So my grandfather has a number of patents. He worked for the Bell Telephone Company, commonly referred to as Ma Bell.
Yeah.
He got several patents. I love the concept of you get to contribute something to the world, and that thing might keep helping people, like the ballpoint pen. People are still benefited by that invention.
The example of seeing your grandfather be an inventor and get those patents and have those ideas recognized led you to a path where you wanted to help other people recognize their ideas. Can you tell us a little bit about your transition from engineer to attorney?
My grandpa did get a PhD. He taught electronics in a college as well. And my father got an MBA. So I didn't think a bachelor's degree alone was going to do it for me.
Yeah,
I wanted to follow their path. When I was finishing up my undergrad in electronics engineering, I was trying to figure out what's next. How am I going to go to the next step? I got married about a year before I graduated my undergrad and had a family to support. I took a job in Maine working as an engineer. And during that time, well, I lived in Maine 1 year.
Okay.
Basically one full year. The month of January was awesome because I went to Tempe, Arizona. A whole month with my company for training. So my undergrad was in Arizona, and I got to come back. I was hanging out with a friend. After I started the job, I got intentional about trying to figure out what is next for me.
Mm-hmm.
Prayer has been a big part of my decision-making throughout my life. And so I said, you know, I think I should probably get an MBA. My dad got one. There's always need for management. And so I said, okay, that's what I think I should do. So I was praying about it for months. One day, I felt this clear impression.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really asking the right question.
Ooh.
So I was saying, I'll go do it if you tell me it's right.
Mm-hmm.
But really what helped me go forward was understanding that I needed to say, I think this is right. I'm confident in my decision. Tell me if it's not right, because I'm going forward.
Yeah.
I needed to put my foot on the path before I would know.
Yeah.
And I hadn't looked at what school exactly I'd want to go to, what I need to get in, what's it going to cost, all those details of actually making it happen. So I started doing that, and it was just barrier after barrier after barrier.
Oh, wow.
Just the things I could overcome, but it was just like, this doesn't add up. Cost-benefit analysis.
Yeah, in order to do some of the things that you want, you have to go through hard things. But
yeah.
This must have been extremely hard. You were like, I don't know if this is for me.
Well, basically, I had a very technical undergrad, and the prerequisites they were wanting for MBA programs, it looked like I was going to have to go back to school for a year or more full time.
Oh, wow.
To qualify for an MBA. And I'm like, this doesn't make sense. I felt like I had an answer, and it was no. I came down to Phoenix and was discussing it with a friend I'd made while I lived here doing my undergrad. My brother is an attorney and works with a patent attorney. You should go talk to the patent attorney. So I scheduled a meeting with him, and we talked, and I loved the idea. I found out, you know, the movie Legally Blonde, where she has a hairdressing degree. Any undergrad will qualify you to go to law school. Oh, they used to have to convince a law school you're up to it, because they don't want to bring people in who are going to fail.
Yeah.
So there was no prerequisites. All those barriers I was hitting before, they were just gone. I wanted to work with inventors, and also the energy that's around inventions and bringing things new to the world. And so, yeah, it was tough. I had to study for a separate test to become a patent attorney. Oh. You can take it without being an attorney. Mm-hmm. If you do and you pass it, you're actually a patent agent instead of a patent attorney.
Okay.
I studied the year before law school, took it once and failed, then took it again my first year of law school and passed. Law school is not easy. Mm-hmm. Lots of studying, lots of writing, exams, bar exams. I knocked down all those challenges. I came out on the other side ready to help people. It wasn't easy. I started a firm on my own, mm-hmm. but I didn't have any business training. Okay. So I made some big mistakes, and I was actually getting further and further in debt.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody, recruiter called and said, do you want to work for somebody else? I'm like, mm-hmm. that doesn't sound like a bad idea right now. I went to work for somebody else in, I think it was 2007, mm-hmm. and then 2008. I don't know if you remember 2008. GM filed bankruptcy. That yes. was just earth-shattering. GM was one of the clients I was working on. They called the partners of the firm I was at and said, we're going to cut way back. We're still going to have you do work, mm-hmm. but a whole lot less.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you have 25 attorneys, a whole lot less means you got to let some attorneys go.
Yeah.
So I got laid off. The Phoenix economy did not recover fast.
Okay.
Did a lot of bankruptcy law. Because that's what mm-hmm. I could do.
Okay.
I thought, well, I'm going to take this job doing bankruptcy for maybe 6 months until I find something better. Mm-hmm. 4 years later, 2013, is when I then said, okay, I got to restart the firm,
mm-hmm.
start my own firm. So,
okay.
And that's when I came up with the naming. The Arizona bar had just changed their rule that you couldn't use a trademark as the name. You had to have partner names mm-hmm. in the title. They changed mm-hmm. that rule just before then. I'm like, hey, I'm going for it.
Good. So yeah. You went through this period of learning, it sounds like, through experience. You started your firm, realized that you didn't have the business experience to actually run a business. There are other entrepreneurs in your shoes. They know how to do something technical, but they don't know how to run a business. There are all kinds of mechanics and things that you need to hone up on or be aware of as when you're operating a business. But when you don't know, you don't know. Kudos to you for recognizing that. So then you take a job working for somebody else. You're doing great. Things are going. You're learning. Then GM bankruptcy. You're going to help other people go through bankruptcy. I imagine it seems, Wayne, that may have been a little draining for you. Yeah. Was that it? It seems like it may have been draining you a little bit. And you start thinking about, I like to help people with these ideals. And that's what gives you joy. So you started back up your firm.
Yeah. When I started my firm, I hired a mm-hmm. business coach. He had a coaching program just for attorneys. Mm-hmm. I've been focused on some kind of coaching for the past 11 years.
Oh, wow. No, I think that's awesome, man. So in a nutshell, what I want you to do is explain to the listeners what your company does.
Okay. Yeah. So we help inventors who have ideas as well as business people with a brand that they want to protect. And we help them figure out the strategy that works for them, or an individual strategy to secure that intellectual property. We file patents for people. We file trademarks for people. So there's a process. We help people through that, doing it as transparent as we can.
Mm-hmm.
We pledge zero hidden fees, working hard to let you know what's coming and what to expect, not surprise you with bills.
What are some stories that you can share, whether it's mishaps or obstacles that people face, or if you've been working with engineers or technical people, what are some of the mistakes that they make that we may need to be aware of if we're thinking about going that route?
One is starting the patent process too soon. when they don't really have the invention completely figured out. I've seen people do that. There have been patents I've taken over from other attorneys who have started them, and they didn't have enough details in the patent to get through the process. So sometimes patenting too soon is a problem. Okay. Another one is sharing your invention with others too soon. I had somebody come to me. He said somebody else had filed a patent application for him, a provisional, which means temporary. There's a temporary patent application. Okay. Lasts 1 year, and then it expires.
Mm-hmm.
You can file another patent before that one expires and tie them together. Somebody else had helped him file the temporary application. It had actually expired without him doing another one. As I did my strategy intake, rule is you can't get a patent if the idea has already been published. Published means anywhere, App Store, eBay, just an internet website. With the exception of your own publication,
yeah,
you get a 1 year grace period. But it had already used up the grace period. He didn't get good advice till he came to me. And then he got the good advice of don't pursue it because you're not going to get it. Find another way to protect what you got.
Yeah. What are some of the other ways he can protect it?
There are some things you can do before you publish that you can't do after you publish. But either way, you get a copyright registration, a trademark, branding, you know, letting people know that this is unique. You can actually combine a trade secret as a brand. So Kentucky Fried Chicken, they are talking all the time about their secret recipe. They even put out press releases how we're going to have an armored truck move the secret recipe from one location to a more secure location. And they do all this press around, and they tell people, we have a secret. If you've got something that works better, or at least you claim it works better, you can tell people, we've got it, and we're the only ones who've got it because we keep it secret.
Oh, wow.
When you file the non-provisional, and that's what they call it, meaning non-temporary patent application, it takes the patent office 20 months for their first step of the examination. And we can expedite there. We can either pay money, or if you've got an inventor on your team who's over 65, we can ask for it based on age without a fee.
Okay.
The fee can be close to $2,000 to get it to go fast. So, because it takes it from 20 months on average down to about 5 months.
Okay.
There's about an 80% chance that you're going to get at least one rejection.
Okay.
And it depends on technology group. Sometimes it goes up to 90%. And there are specific examiners that 5% makes it past them. I mean, it's just brutal. We get surprised sometimes when we prepare a patent and it doesn't get a rejection. But it does happen. A lot of things people, I get asked a lot is, why do they reject them all? Partly it's this process. They've got to interpret words on a page. We have to write down the legal claims of in words on a page saying, this is what the invention is. And it's new. Nobody's done this before. So then they look at that and say, oh, let me go see if I can find that. Well, they may interpret those words differently than I do, or they might get a little too broad on comparing. When they search, they're like, hey, that kind of looks like it. Words aren't fully perfectly specific. And we also don't want it to be too specific. If you make a patent that's really narrow, nobody's going to infringe it. So what's the point of having the patent? We're trying to get it broad enough, but within that range, usually we're asking for something that's in a gray area, or part of it's in a gray area. They reject us based on that. Then we've got to get on the same page of what they found and whether or not it's truly the same thing or not. The average in the patent office is around 3 rejections before it gets accepted.
And what's the current number of patent applications? If we were to file a patent today, how many applications would be in front of me in line?
I think it's 80,000 something. I did a YouTube short and I don't remember the number, but it was a silly short about somebody calling in saying, was wondering how long it's going to take for my patent application. It says, oh, please hold. You are number 80,000.
I have one question that I want to ask. You mentioned that you got married before you graduated from undergrad. Can you tell me a little bit about your home life, your family life?
Still married, same person. It's wonderful.
All right. Congratulations.
I give her a ton of credit because entrepreneurial life is rough and it does wreck a lot of marriages. It's really hard. She's dedicated to me. I'm dedicated to her. We actually work together. She's my assistant, helping make everything run. She's a better business person than I am. I'm really glad I have her.
That's good.
So, yeah, we have 6 kids. 5 of them are adults, and then we have one that's still in school. So we are approaching that empty nester stage of life. And, yeah, we love to play pickleball a lot together.
I just started playing pickleball a few weeks ago.
It's addictive.
Yeah, it is. I'm just learning. Not great yet, but it's really fun.
I have friends that have shirts that say, I can't. I have pickleball.
You mentioned earlier that in your life, you're guided by prayer. Can you talk about how your faith has helped you along your entrepreneurial journey?
You know, it was a big breakthrough understanding that trusting myself and trusting God enough to say, I've done my homework. I think I've done what I need to figure out a good decision. This is what I'm doing forward. But then also being open to impressions of, is this not working or it's not going to work? There's many ups and downs when you have your own business, when you're an entrepreneur. And so prayer sometimes is comfort and knowing that if it all burns down, there's something bigger than that. And so you're going to make mistakes if you're an entrepreneur. When you're making a mistake as an entrepreneur, you know, I just made a mistake that cost me $5,000. I lost $100,000 on that housing deal. And it's like, it really hurts, but don't beat yourself up. You just got to learn from it and move on and not say, well, I'm a terrible person because I made this mistake. It's quite the opposite. You were brave enough to try and be willing to make this mistake.
I love that concept of being brave enough to make a mistake. Many people have dreams and potentially great ideals that they're not brave enough to take action on. I would encourage you, if you're listening to this episode, if you have that ideal, whether it's to start a business or something that's patentable, some kind of invention, be brave enough to make the mistake. You're going to make some mistakes. What's important is that you learn from those mistakes and don't beat yourself up. I get the point of I have to do better the next time. Here are the actions I am going to take to improve in order to reduce the likelihood that that same thing is going to happen to me in the future. But mistakes happen. You have to learn how to move past them.
Yeah. Learning to accept help, even if you're paying for that help. There are a lot of things you can do. And when you're starting, you just have to do.
Yeah.
But getting those easy tasks, answering the phones, sending some emails, if there are things that you can either automate, have somebody else automate for you, or do for you, try to get other people to do that as soon as you can. That's part of the hard thing, to let stuff go as well.
We take people through a process: delegate, eliminate, automate. And you delegate it, you eliminate it, or automate it. For some tasks, that's what you want to do, one of those three. So you can free up your time to focus on high leverage, income producing activities that's going to help you build your business.
Yeah, that's what IBM has been doing for many years. They'll take a, you know, somebody says, okay, we're going to let you take over this job function for us, because that's kind of what they do. And they work on automating it, eliminating steps that don't need to be done. And unfortunately, once you automate and eliminate enough, you lay off a lot of people.
Yeah.
But in the long run, if you've got people doing things that aren't efficient and that you can automate,
mm-hmm.
it's hard to say, well, it's time to move on. But that's the world we live in now. There are things where you're going to have to move on. And AI is going to be interesting how it keeps going and
yeah.
is going to have people move on from what they were doing.
Yeah, and I can only imagine some of the legal discussions that are happening or have been happening around the topic of artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
That's been a hot topic.
Well, I have a podcast on artificial intelligence. There's a project that was set up and a bunch of attorneys from around the world volunteered their time to test an invention that an AI created by themselves.
Oh, wow.
They set up this AI to find something on its own and invent something. And it did it. They applied for patents all over the world saying, mm-hmm. this machine invented it. It's an AI by itself. The majority of countries said, no, you have to be a human to be an inventor. That's going to continue to develop. There's a website. And if you look for my podcast, you can search by titles. And
what's your podcast?
Leveraging Inspiration. If you put in Leveraging Inspiration and Patent, the long name is Leveraging Inspiration, the Inspired Patent Podcast.
And we'll make sure that we include a link in the show notes. If there was one thing that our audience takes away from our conversation, either to implement or to not do, what would it be?
So if you have an idea that you think could be patentable, could be worth going through the process of bringing a product to market, write it down and don't tell people without a non-disclosure agreement. Loose lips sink ships. You know?
Got it.
The thing is, I talked about earlier how your own publication, you have a 1-year grace period.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put it out there and people start talking about it and start talking about their version of it, that's mm-hmm. not your publication anymore.
Yeah.
If somebody else publishes, puts it on the internet, puts it on Reddit, you missed your chance. If it's before your mm-hmm. filing date, and this changed about 11 years ago in 2013,
okay.
it used to be you could prove when you invented it
mm-hmm.
and secure your rights. Now, it doesn't matter when you invented it. It only matters when you filed for a patent.
Okay. If you have an idea, write it down. Seek the services of an attorney, someone that can help you walk through this process so that your idea can be protected and you can hopefully monetize it down the road in the future.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's great. What's the best way for our listeners to get in contact with you if they're interested in learning more about your services?
If you go to my website, inspiredideasolutions.com, there's a link where you can schedule a free consultation. We'll meet for half an hour and talk about what makes sense for next steps.
This is patents, trademarks, anything you're working on to protect.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Wayne, thank you again for this conversation. It's been really enlightening for me. And I'm going to end this podcast episode like I end every podcast episode, and that's this. Many people know what to do. Fewer people know how to do it. And there's a select group of people that follow through, do it, and that allows them to live the life of their dreams. Wayne, I want to thank you for being part of that select few. It's been great having you on.
Thank you, James.
Thank you for listening to Engineer Your Success with Dr. James Bryant. Do me a favor and subscribe to the podcast. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player. Many people know what to do. Fewer people know how to do it, and a small fraction of people actually do it. I believe that you can have success both in business and in life, and it's my passion to guide you on your path to engineering your success. Thanks.